Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The economy's in crisis these days, but it's not the only issue waiting for the next president of the United States. No one thinks this country's health care system is healthy. Barack Obama and John McCain have very different plans for how to change it, and those plans just ran into a Wall Street meltdown. This hour, On Point, through the storm of financial crisis, we look at the basic issue of health care and what McCain and Obama propose for the country. You can join the conversation. Are you ready to give up your tax-free employee health care a la McCain to pay for covering millions more Americans a la Obama? Can we make a change? We will hear from health care advisors to both John McCain and Barack Obama this hour. But joining us first from Washington for an update on the struggle over the giant Wall Street bailout package and its budget implications is Gail Chadwick, congressional reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, thanks for being here.
Oh, good to be with you, Tom.
Gail, is this thing moving? Is it stuck? How would you describe what's happening? We're told it's urgent. Is it happening?
Well, you know, the interesting player in all of this is not elected. It's the markets. And when this began a week ago, Congress was told that if they didn't move quickly on a bailout, the markets would melt down. Now, they haven't done that yet. And I've been talking to a lot of members about whether they think it's going to give them more time, and they do. So I don't hear anyone saying we've got to get this done by Thursday or the world melts. They're now looking into next week.
Maybe the Treasury Secretary is saying something like that. Maybe Ben Bernanke, but not congresspeople. What are the key sticking points, Gail? Where is the negotiation focused?
Well, among Democrats, they're looking at questions like, what do the taxpayers get for this bailout? Do they get an equity share? Will they get some sort of return when these bad assets are sold down the line? This is a point that the Fed Chairman Bernanke tried to reassure them about in testimony on Tuesday. He said, look, there is going to be a return here. We just don't know how much it's going to be. And the other issue that's a very emotional one among voters that are calling in to members of Congress is executive compensation. They just can't swallow the idea that the executives that got us into this trouble should walk away with golden parachutes. The Treasury Secretary thinks that if you have anything punitive, it means that banks will be reluctant to participate in the bailout. And so that, I think those are the two big issues, but there's an even larger one, and especially among Republicans who think that the whole concept of a bailout is foreign to the ideas that brought them to Washington, and the market should sort this out on its own. And this is really the concern end of day Tuesday. Speaker Pelosi said that, look, Democrats aren't going to take the brunt of this bailout ourselves. We're looking for significant Republican support, and so is the White House.
Is there a chance, are people speculating, that the answer from Congress to Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke could simply be no, no bailout?
You know, when push comes to shove, I think they're going to have to do something. There are I think there are lots of members who don't want to be the first one into the breach, dear friends, but feel that the market is an actor. One lawmaker told me the other day, had the market dropped 500 points on Monday, 500 points on Tuesday, 500 points on Wednesday, we would have given the administration exactly what they wanted. Right now, I think the sense on Wall Street is that these negotiations are serious and ongoing. If that changed, I think you'd see a response from the market and a response on Capitol Hill. It's a very delicate and somber set of exchanges.
And Gail, if the assumption remains at this point that some kind of bailout will happen, it will be on the scale that Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson has requested, $700 billion, talk of maybe a trillion. Has Congress begun to, you know, get out a pencil and on the back of the envelope figure out what that means for budgets going forward? Does it mean a direct, real bite into the, you know, dollars available to do things in this country next year?
Absolutely. We don't know how much of a bite until we know what these, what the government's going to pay for these toxic assets that now no one wants to buy. Once we buy them, the assumption is that they'll be held until they can be sold at a higher rate. We don't know how long that's going to be. So in the interim, we're going to wait and see what the Congressional Budget Office says about those budget numbers. Now, the last time they reported to Congress, just a few weeks ago, it was one of the most sober reports anyone here has ever heard. They were talking about trillion-dollar deficits a year by 2017 and 2018, a half a trillion deficit in the fiscal year that begins next week on October 1st.
And that's before this bailout even hit the table.
Before the bailout is even calculated. So, you know, you heard the candidates, Senator McCain, Senator Obama yesterday, talking about this, but they haven't begun yet to publicly say what that's going to do to their cut taxes and increased spending programs.
Gail Chadwick with the Christian Science Monitor in Washington. Gail, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We will talk more about the bailout in our second hour today with Barney Frank, Newt Gingrich, Senator Bernie Sanders, and more. You can catch it on air or at our website, onpointradio.org. Right now, we're looking at the basic issue of health care. To open up the McCain and Obama proposals, we're joined by Julie Rovner, NPR's health policy correspondent and author of Health Care Politics and Policy A to Z. That sounds like what we need. Julie, thanks very much for being here.
Nice to be here.
You know I'm going to ask you if everything they're planning has been thrown into shambles by what's up with the bailout. But before I pose that question, can you just lay out for us in simple terms the distinction between what these two candidates are proposing for health care? You and others say there may be areas where they're not so far apart, but on this one there's a very distinct and clear difference in their approach.
Indeed there is. And, you know, it's funny, even before all this started going on with Wall Street, you know, in the past we've seen Republicans and Democrats, and you could really describe the differences between them as more government and less government. I think really what we have here between Senator McCain and Senator Obama is more regulation and less regulation. And I guess it's that point is driven home by what we're really talking about with what's going on Wall Street. I think Senator Obama's plan really looks at more regulation of the health insurance markets to make it easier for people to get health insurance. Senator McCain's plan really relies very much more on the market and deregulating health insurance in essence, letting people buy insurance across state lines, which they can't do now. The individual insurance market is regulated state by state, and letting the markets really, you know, do their thing, letting people, you know, taking the tax incentives and giving them just to people individually rather than through their employers and letting the market work.
Let's go to McCain's first. He would take away the no-tax situation we have now on health care benefits that are given by employers to employees. In other words, if you get, I don't know, whatever it is, $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 worth of health care benefits, you'd pay taxes on those. And in return, he would do what?
You would get a tax credit instead. Right now you have what's called a tax exclusion. The value of the benefits, the health benefits you get, is not taxable to you. So you just simply don't see that. You would pay taxes on it instead if it was over the amount of the credit. So basically that would be an invitation for everybody to go out into the individual market. Now there would be a big element of it would take away an element of unfairness that's currently in the market that everybody has recognized for a long time, which is that if your employer doesn't offer you health insurance and you go out and buy it yourself, you get no tax benefit right now. And everybody, Republicans and Democrats, have recognized for years how unfair that is.
Right.
If you're self-employed and you buy your own health insurance, you do get a tax benefit. But if you simply don't get offered it and have to buy it in the individual market, you're simply out of luck. So he would fix that and put everybody on the same playing field. But if you get very generous health insurance right now, you could end up paying taxes on the value of that. basically the idea is that it would put way more people into the individual market, that it would over time that there would certainly be less of an incentive for employers to provide insurance, and that there would be many more people in the individual market. And the hope is that it would really give rise to a much more robust individual market in which people would go out and perhaps make the individual market more competitive than it is now.
So there's the deregulatory way, and we'll talk about the details, but take away the tax break, give a tax credit for $2,500 individual, $5,000 for a family, and very likely good luck to you in the individual market. What about the Obama plan? How would people experience that? What's he proposing?
The Obama plan is kind of more, let's get people more together into groups. It would set up sort of a la what President Clinton was talking about 14 years ago, have a health insurance exchange where you could come and take your choice of a lot of different plans, including a government-run plan that would look something like Medicare, or, if you will, something like what the federal employees now have a choice of. That would be, you know, a government Medicare type plan that you could choose, bring people together, make it harder for insurance companies to discriminate on the basis of people who are already sick, who have pre-existing conditions. It would do some what we call reinsurance. That was something that Senator Kerry had in his plan 4 years ago. So the very sickest people, the government would take over those costs. It would make it easier for insurers to lower their premiums. There would be fairly large subsidies for people with low incomes. So it would make it easier for them to get insurance. It would keep pretty much intact the employer-based system that we have now, or encourage employers to stay in that. In fact, it would require employers to either keep that insurance going or pay a fee. We have the play or pay aspect of it. So it kind of combines a number of features that we've seen before from Democrats in the past. A lot of people have pointed out that actually Senator McCain's plan is more radical than Senator Obama's plan. It would probably change the system more.
Which would cover more of the 46 million Americans currently not covered at all, Julie?
I think there's no question that Senator Obama's plan would cover far more people than Senator McCain's plan. Pretty much every healthcare analyst has said that Senator Obama's plan would probably cover 34, 35 million of the 46 million uninsured.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about healthcare plans and economic realities. McCain's plan, Obama's plan, and big American decisions to be made on healthcare coverage. Julie Rovner is with us. She's health policy correspondent for NPR. She'll ride along with us this hour as we speak with representatives of the two camps. Let's listen for just a moment to each. In his speech at the Republican National Convention on September 4th, John McCain criticized Obama's health care plan for what he described as its big government footprint.
My health care plan will make it easier for more Americans to find and keep good health care insurance. His plan will force small businesses to cut jobs, reduce wages, and force families into a government-run healthcare system where a bureaucrat stands between you and your doctor.
And the boos rained down. Obama's campaign this week, Monday, put out an ad linking John McCain's plans and deregulation proposals in healthcare to his previous positions in banking.
We've seen what Bush-McCain policies have done to our economy. Now John McCain wants to do the same to our healthcare. McCain just published an article praising Wall Street deregulation.
There you go, and it sounds like the music from Jaws in the background. Boom, 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 boom. Julie, we're going to hear from representatives in just a second, but first let's just go to costs for a moment. Is there a clear difference in the cost of these two campaigns? I'm looking here at numbers from the Tax Policy Center in Washington. They say McCain's proposal would increase the national debt by $1.3 trillion over 10 years and insure 5 million more people by 2013. They say Obama's would cost about $1.6 in increased debt trillion over that time and reduce uninsured rolls by 18 million. So a little higher cost, but a lot more coverage with Obama. Do those numbers make sense to you, Julie?
Those numbers sounded, I think it may be a little low on the number of people covered by Obama, but certainly Senator McCain's plan costs less and covers fewer people. But I think this is sort of a a fundamental issue between the two campaigns, and indeed between, you know, health policy analysts that we've seen, the question of, do you try to cut costs first or do you try to cover people first? And this has sort of, you know, been put in the issue of, do you want to load more deck chairs onto the Titanic? You know, we have a very serious problem with healthcare costs. And the question is, do you cut costs before you try to load everybody else, you know, onto the boat, or can you not cut costs until you get everybody covered? And this is a fundamental debate in health policy that's going on. Do you need everybody covered before you can start bringing costs down? Or if you cover everybody and then start bringing costs down, do you have a bigger problem? And I think Senator McCain says he really wants to go after costs first. Senator Obama says, no, he really wants to get more people covered first. And that's really the heart of this debate over these two plans.
Let's go to the representatives of each. Joining us from Washington is Gail Walensky, economist and senior fellow at Project Hope. She's a senior advisor to John McCain, a contributor to the McCain healthcare plan. Gail Walensky, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And with me in the studio, David Cutler, economist at Harvard University and chief healthcare advisor to Barack Obama. David Cutler, thank you very much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Gail, first to you. You heard the ad there we just played from Obama out this week. They say, you saw what deregulation and McCain-Bush did to Wall Street. They'll do the same to healthcare. What do you say, Gail?
I'm astounded you'd use it, but I'm actually delighted that you did. Fact Checked has criticized the campaign for making those comments. It was clear that Senator McCain was using the reference to an ATM card, that you can use an ATM card as you cross around the country, and not suggesting deregulation. So I'm a little surprised you would promote that idea.
Well, we've got John McCain speaking for himself at the convention, and there's Obama speaking for himself in his campaign. But there is a strong deregulatory impulse in the McCain proposal. And what is the point of that?
It is to create a national market for insurance, to have the forces of competition be able to push down administrative costs. Places like Maryland, which is where I work, although I live in the district, is basically dominated by two insurance companies. Many places are dominated by a single insurance company, and this is to provide people more choices who choose not to go with their employer. Most people will continue with their employer. Employer-sponsored insurance is voluntary. It is where the majority of Americans receive their health care. Right now, Julia had mentioned that some people don't receive a tax subsidy if their employer doesn't sponsor insurance. But it's much more serious than that. The value of having it come through your employer varies from almost no tax subsidy for people who don't pay income tax or who have very low tax rates to much more of a subsidy for the highest income individuals. Most people with a $5,000 credit, most workers, would get way more subsidy than they receive currently under the tax exclusion. But for people who aren't offered health insurance coverage, they will not only be able to get the insurance available in their state, but to be able to get insurance in other states if that suits them better. It is not taking away any of the laws that exist, including the insurance laws in your state or the protections that the so-called HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, provides against pre-existing conditions. All of those laws continue. It is to allow people to search out better insurance and to help build a more robust individual market for those that want to go that direction.
Gail, the Tax Policy Center says that the McCain plan would increase federal debt by $1.3 trillion over 10 years, cover another 5 million people by 2013.
That is just wrong. It is budget neutral over 10 years. I don't know the assumptions they were using about the credit. But the credit will be indexed, unlike the alternative minimum tax, but it will be indexed to either the current consumer price index or to some measure in the economy. And just as when the Wyden-Bennett proposal was looked at by the Congressional Budget Office and held to be budget neutral over time because of that same kind of pressure to not have health care spending grow as quickly, so much faster than the economy, this will drive to budget neutrality. So I don't know what assumption the Tax Policy Center was using, but is just flat wrong.
We'll hear more on that front. Let me turn to David Cutler, Chief Healthcare Advisor for Barack Obama. David Cutler, first of all, to the McCain argument that what's really needed here is to let individuals have more choice. And as Gail Walensky says, no, your employer provided health care won't be tax-free, but you'll have a tax credit that in many cases will more than cover the taxes you'll now pay on that coverage. What do you say to those, and how do you see the Obama plan as different, or I suppose you'd say better?
Let me first address the issue about about Senator McCain's plan. As you mentioned, it does tax employer-provided health insurance. Mm-hmm. There was an article that was out last week by an independent group of economists that estimated that 20 million people who currently have employer-provided insurance would lose their employer-provided
Why?
Insurance as a result, because the cost has gone up. You have a big tax hike on it. You make it much more expensive for employers to provide it.
But the individuals will pay those taxes, won't they? Or does the employer pay a tax?
The individual pays it, but the reason that the employer is providing it is because the individual is getting the break on it. So mm-hmm. you take away the individual break on it, and all of a sudden there's no reason for the employers to go about providing the insurance. We know that every time that that it gets more expensive for employers to provide insurance, many fewer employers stop providing insurance.
John McCain might not agree with those numbers, but he might say, what's the problem if more yep. people go out and buy individual insurance? We have more competition yep. and they get served by the market.
So the question is, what will happen to those 45 million people plus the 20 million people who lose their employer-provided insurance? One thing that will happen is that insurers will be free to pick and choose who they cover. Under the McCain plan, that's explicit. Insurers can turn you down if they want. So, for example, if you have a family history of cancer, they may decide not to cover you at all, or they may decide to cover you only excluding cancer, or they may decide to charge you three times more than they would charge someone without a family history of cancer. Second, many of the benefits that people now are entitled to would be eliminated once you let insurers sell across state lines. 46 states currently require that firms in the individual market give people the right to a mandatory external review if the plan denies the coverage that they think they're entitled to. That would be eliminated. 49 states require cancer screenings to be covered under health insurance in that market. That would be eliminated. 44 states require mental health parity in insurance. That would be eliminated.
I'm sure Gail will have a response to some of these. What about the Obama plan then? You know, people saw 14 years ago when the Clintons were proposing very big, scary charts about what it meant if you had more government involvement in health care. Mm-hmm. Is the Obama chart going to be held up in the same way? Is it going to look like that?
No, it's not going to look like that. The basics of the Obama plan are to make sure that all Americans have access to quality, affordable medical care that costs less than the current system does.
Nice to say. How do you do it?
How do you do it? You do it in three ways. First is you invest a lot of money in making the medical system work better so that it's not as costly and you can eliminate waste. Estimates are that about 40 to 50% of medical care is doing no good. And by doing the right investments and the right changes, we can eliminate that. Second, you need to give people real, meaningful tax credits so that they can afford insurance. The McCain tax credit is $5,000. For a family with any kind of chronic disease, their insurance plan might cost $15,000 or $20,000. There's no way that family is going to be able to afford care. You've got to give a tax credit that is meaningful, that makes middle-class people able to afford health care. And third, you've got to guarantee that people have the right to buy it, that the insurers can't turn them down, that the insurers can't exclude them, that the insurers can't pick and choose who they want to cover. If you do that, you can get people covered and you can make the system cost less.
We'll talk about costs. We'll talk about efficiency. Let's hear from our listeners in Beaufort, South Carolina, Samantha. Samantha, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just calling. I do take offense to the lady that represents Senator McCain to call their project Hope, because I feel that what they're proposing doesn't offer hope to people who are uninsured. And I don't think we need a solution by 2013. I think we need a solution immediately.
Well, I'm sure, Samantha, John McCain would do it much sooner and would probably say that he could help you get insurance. But what's your circumstance? Let's hear it.
My circumstance is that I just got laid off my job, and because I live in South Carolina and my company had less than 20 employees, I do not qualify for COBRA, so I cannot continue my group insurance policy. So I have to go out and find an individual insurance policy. And
can you do that? Can you do that?
What I found is that I cannot, because I have pre-existing health conditions, and that all the insurance companies have the right to deny me health insurance.
Samantha, hold it right there. I want to get Gail's response. Gail, what would John McCain's plan do for Samantha in South Carolina?
First thing, Project Hope is my day job. It is a 50-year-old philanthropic organization that provides health care around the world. Mm-hmm. Please do not disparage Project Hope if you don't like John McCain. I'm volunteering my time for John McCain, so mm-hmm. that's very important to me. Second is the first thing that would happen is this woman would receive a credit. I don't know whether she's single or has any dependents, so it will either be $2,500 credit if it is just her, or it'll be a $5,000 credit if she has any dependents.
But Samantha's suggesting with her pre-existing conditions, she's just plain having trouble getting coverage at all.
Okay. Now, there are two options that she can pursue. The first is if she is unable to receive insurance. The senator has proposed something called a guaranteed access plan. Anybody who is either unable to receive insurance or who receives insurance that is substantially over the average premiums will be able to receive extra subsidized insurance through the guaranteed access plan. States will come together. I know North Carolina has a very interesting one that they are just implementing. Excuse me, I don't know about South Carolina, but that's every state will either individually or pooled together with other states have available for people who have difficulty getting insurance or getting reasonably priced insurance a guaranteed access plan with special subsidies attached to it. So either what she can search out or what will be available through the high-risk plan will be available to this woman and available right away.
Mm. David Cutler, how do you hear Samantha's story? How do you see her, what she would confront under an Obama plan, under a McCain plan?
Unfortunately, about a third of Americans are in the position that Samantha's in, that they have a chronic condition and insurers are not going to want to cover them or will only cover them at very high cost. And what Samantha said is exactly true. That is, under the McCain plan, she would not be able to get insurance.
Gail says there's a guaranteed access plan.
Senator McCain has proposed an amount of money for the guaranteed access plan that makes the experts laugh. The estimates that I've seen are that it's anywhere from 10 to 50 times too small to actually do much good. You can talk all you want about it. The reality is, unless you're willing to put up the funds to make it work, it's not going to do very much good for people like Samantha.
But what about Barack Obama's plans? Are there the funds, especially what we're seeing in Washington right now, are there the funds for Obama's plan either? Are we going to be in a stalemate for the next 4 years?
There are the funds for it. Senator Obama has laid out exactly how he would finance his health care plan. And what he said is that the tax reductions that President Bush enacted for high-income people in 2001 and 2003, that is people earning over $250,000 a year, that was not the best use of those funds, and that those funds should instead go to help middle-income and lower-income people be able to afford health insurance. Mm. Once you have access to those funds, you can make it affordable for people like Samantha. Senator McCain has said that he wants to continue those tax cuts on the very high-income people, and not only that, he wants to double them again through cuts to corporate taxes and individual taxes that would benefit high-income people. When he does that, there's no money left to help people who are middle-income.
Julie Robner with NPR, do you see the money for either of these plans, or might we be stalemated once again, given the financial crisis we're facing now and questions that were pre-existing, on health care reform?
You know, I think it's less a matter of money, and I don't mean to downplay the money. Money is always a big issue. Then it is really a matter of, oxygen in the room. What I think worries me the most is that, come next January, there's going to be a new president and a new Congress, and I don't think this financial crisis is going to be over, and it's just going to be, a matter of time and attention. Is Congress going to really be able, and Congress and a new president, to devote the amount of energy and time and attention to a full full-scale health overhaul when there is so much else going on that's taking so much time and attention. You know, Congress is scrambling to get out of town and go home and campaign now. You know, this issue of is this bailout going to happen this week or next week? You know, Congress is trying to adjourn at the end of this week. And I think that's the biggest concern. We saw this happen to President Clinton at the beginning of his term, too, when other things cropped up. In fact, there was a financial crisis. And I think that's almost a bigger concern than the money.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about health care plans and economic realities, McCain's plans, Obama's plans, and big American decisions to be made on health care coverage. Gail Walensky is with us. She's senior advisor to John McCain on health care. David Cutler is chief health care advisor to Barack Obama. NPR's Julie Rovner is here as well. A lot of changes in the air with the crisis on Wall Street, basic realities changing. In an interview with the Today Show's Matt Lauer, aired yesterday, Barack Obama said the $700 billion bailout on the table would delay his plans for the country.
We don't anticipate that all that money gets spent right away, and we don't anticipate that all that money is lost. How we're going to structure that in budget terms is still has to be decided. Does that mean that I can do everything that I've called for in this campaign
Probably not.
Probably not. I think we're going to have to phase it in. And a lot of it's going to depend on what our tax revenues look like.
Probably not be able to do everything he's proposed right away, given what we're in the middle of right now. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Carl. Carl, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Absolutely an excellent, great show today. And I look at it like this. I find that the health insurance companies in this country is an absolute joke. Because even if you have full coverage, you still may be left out in the wind and maybe not able to pay your bills and everything. But this administration, you know, come up with $700 billion. Let me say that again. They just come out of the wind with $700 billion to socialize Wall Street, but they don't have any money to socialize medicine and have free health care, to affordable health care for citizens.
But do you want socialized medicine? That phrase has been used to pummel certain kind of change, Carl. Do you really want that?
It has to be better than what we have. I mean, you have, like you said, 40-something million people without health insurance and living day-to-day. And even if you have health insurance, it's still not guaranteed. I mean, Barack Obama's own mother had to fight with the with the health insurance companies till the day she died. So average Joe citizen out here just don't stand a chance. It has to be better than what we have. So if you can socialize business, which that's what they're doing, but trust me, it's gonna go up to probably about $2 trillion in the end.
Carl, you've got your tote board working there, and we hear it. I thank you for your call. Let's get one from Des Moines, Iowa. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great topic.
Thank you.
I'm an HR manager, and I've been busy over the last 30 years trying to keep our company's healthcare costs under control.
I bet you have, yeah.
Go up astronomically. We're to the point now where a single health care plan for a single employee costs about $600 a month, and a family policy costs about $1,300 a month.
Wow.
And I don't think either plan from either McCain or the Obama factions will address those kinds of costs.
Now, Bill, let me ask you right there, why wouldn't the McCain plan? Julie Rovner says McCain's emphasis seems to be strongly on costs. Costs are a big problem for this country. Gail Walensky says he's going to get competition involved here. Maybe people will be out there, in the individual market buying more of their own. Maybe as an HR manager, it won't even be your problem anymore.
I don't think there's competition in the healthcare industry as it is. I don't think either one of your panelists can say that they know where they can go to find out what a particular procedure will cost. If you say that I need to have an appendectomy,
mm-hmm.
where do you find out the prices of those? If you go to a particular hospital and say, what's it going to cost me? They're going to ask you, well, which health plan are you in? Because they have a different price for every carrier.
It's not like shopping for a gallon of milk. Bill, stand by. I want to put that to Gail Walensky. Gail, here's an HR manager in Des Moines. He cares a lot about costs, and you hear his skepticism of both plans. What about the McCain plan and his concern?
Well, I'm glad he's raised that. What Senator McCain has proposed, actually, these are areas where there is less difference than in terms of how to cover more people, is that better information be available on prices and on quality, that you make that information transparent just so that people have a better way to understand what it will cost them and who does good work, who has good clinical outcomes. A lot of emphasis on improving the use of generics, both for regular pharmaceuticals but for the new biotechs, re-importing drugs to put downward pressure on those prices. Changing reimbursement so that you reward the kind of behavior you want to see, those clinicians and institutions that provide the good quality care and the more efficient care that you will now know about being paid differently than those who don't, taking care of the liability issue that drives extra costs with zero value other than to the trial lawyers, being able to make use of information on clinical protocols and patient safety to provide protection to clinicians and institutions.
Let me begin to put some of that list
to happen.
Yeah,
let me put it down spending.
HR boss Bill in Des Moines, are you comforted by that?
No, not at all, because I don't find that any of the healthcare industry really wants to go to the point of reporting on the cost and quality factors, even to the level of the leapfrog reports that are being, that are trying to be created by the auto industry.
So if you have to choose, Bill, if you have to choose an Obama way or a McCain way, and you're not satisfied with either, which way would you choose?
I think there's an alternative to both of them. Why not use vouchers? Why not give every citizen a voucher that they could go to any healthcare provider that they wanted to use, whether it's an insurance company, an association, a delivery organization, use that voucher to buy a basic health plan that would be prescribed countrywide with the standard provisions of that health policy, and that would be the basis for coverage for every citizen in the country.
Would that be privately run, though, or government run?
It could be privately run. Every private insurer would have to provide the base plan for the voucher. And then if employers and unions or employers on their own wanted to buy additional coverages above and beyond the base plan, then they could do that at their own expense.
Bill, you may get drafted to run for president if costs go up further. Thanks for your call. Charleston, Virginia. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, John. How you doing?
All right. What do you know, Joe?
Well, I have a full-time job, plus I opened up a small business, and we have some employees. So we would love to provide health care plan for them, but we cannot at this time. And my fears under the Obama plan would be, you know, proposed raising taxes, payroll taxes, to support some of his programs, which I think in theory are wonderful, but in reality would be make it more challenging for small businesses that make up a majority of this country's business. We talk about large corporations, but it would really impact the small businesses that perhaps are barely making it, where we will not be able to provide any health care plan because of additional revenue coming out.
Joe, let's put it straight to his chief health care advisor, David Cutler. How about it? Joe's got a small business. He'd like to provide health care. He feels like he can't afford it, and feels like Obama would make it tougher with his requirements on a small business like his.
Actually, the Obama plan would make it substantially easier for a small employer to afford health insurance. First, he's proposed a tax credit for small employers that offer health insurance, a very substantial tax credit. Second is he wants to reduce the cost of health insurance, particularly for small firms. Currently, a small firm will pay about 40% more for health insurance than a large firm will.
Because it doesn't have the same volume. It
doesn't have the same volume. There's underwriting of each specific employee. They're dealing with brokers individually. By grouping the small firms and the individuals together into a larger group, the way that the health insurance exchanges are proposed and the way that many Democrats and Republicans want to do, would be able to cut down on the cost by about 25% to 30%.
Now, is that a government-run health plan then, this exchange, or is it private, just organized through a government facility?
Oh, it would be private. The health insurance plans would be private. People would have we envision people would have access to a variety of private plans or to a public plan if that's what they want, but there would be in no sense a government takeover of it. It is government facilitating people being able to buy health insurance, particularly in small firms.
Joe, are you comforted by that? Sounds like Joe may be off pouring concrete or whatever it is. Yes, Joe, are you comforted by that idea?
No, And the reason is because it may offset the cost, but how is that going to be the taxes to fund the other programs? I mean, the payroll taxes are supposed to be going up in under his plan, and the burden, the tax burden is going to go up. So is that going to offset the increases in the burden, the taxes?
David Cutler?
2 points. One is what Senator Obama's proposed is that particularly larger firms that are able to pay for health insurance but are not doing so now should contribute to that. And more generally on tax policy, Senator Obama has proposed a tax cut for everyone earning under $250,000 a year, not a tax increase. And it's very, very important to understand that that's what his policy is.
Let's get a call from Devla in Boston. Devla, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, I watched a show on PBS recently, Frontline Special, comparing insurance plans internationally, and they found that a key to countries which have successful plans with quality as high as in the U.S., lower costs in terms of percentage of GDP, and universal coverage covering everybody, is that nobody is allowed to opt out of the plans. It covers the entire population of the country, and that's a key to keeping costs down and to keeping accessibility high. But neither candidate seems to be going that far, although Obama's going a little further than McCain in terms of limiting the number of people who can opt out.
Let me put it to Gail Walensky, Devla. Gail, what about it? Devla wonders if, requiring everybody in the pool would make things better. John McCain is championing some ability to, I guess, opt out here. How do you look at that issue?
He is making sure that everybody in the United States, people who don't work for employers who offer health insurance, who work on their own, who are students not eligible to their parents' policies, every single individual in the United States is able to receive a tax credit that they can turn over for the purchase of health insurance coverage. The question about requiring everyone to participate gets into a series of issues that I think both candidates want to avoid if it's at all possible, or just want to avoid altogether. And that is, once you require people to have insurance, you have to say exactly what that insurance will look like. You have to decide how you will pay for it. You may decide whether or not you will set the price for that. There are a lot of very difficult issues. We've never had a point in our history where everyone is able to receive subsidies to buy health insurance coverage. And that is so much more than we have ever allowed our country, that it is a very important first step to take. There are places where people can receive care if they don't get covered, but it's important that everyone be able to buy health insurance coverage, have a subsidy, and have places where they can go buy it. And that is a very important next step.
Julie Rovner, you know, we debate these as kind of lay people. I'm sure there's a big conversation going on in the medical community and the healthcare policy community right across the whole spectrum here. Are these two, are they both seen as viable? Is one seen as more economically or politically feasible than the other? How are these being weighed among people, you know, who think about this all the time?
Well, I think certainly, you know, the one thing that's important to remember, you know, we keep talking this week about this $700 billion, you know, bailout of Wall Street. You know, you want
yes,
a really
do.
Big number. The really big number is $2.1 trillion. That's how much the U.S. spent on health care in 2006. That's
wow.
The last number that we actually have, the last year we have real numbers for. And, you know, that number is, remember, not just spending, that's income for doctors and hospitals and nursing homes and drug companies and everybody involved in, you know, the healthcare infrastructure in the United States. And changing healthcare substantially, and both of these plans would talk about changing healthcare substantially, means, you know, messing around with the income of a lot of very powerful people. And that's why it hasn't happened until now. Because every time you talk about doing this, you're talking about messing with somebody's income, talking about redistribution of a lot of money. And I think, you know, so if whenever you're talking about whether, you know, health, some kind of healthcare reform is viable, you got to remember that these are big, big numbers. And all of these people have lobbyists and powerful interests. And, you know, the interests of, you know, the patients always seem to come last. And that's the real big effort. You know, the members, there's got to be some kind of agreement, some kind of big agreement, or there's got to be some kind of big crisis. I think that's what we're seeing, you know, here with Wall Street. And I did, it's funny, I guess this is the 20th anniversary of a story I wrote about how bad would it really have to get before Congress and the president had to do something about health care. I don't know whether we're there yet, but boy, you know, it's like the frog in the pot of water. It keeps boiling and boiling. And there's a lot of people. It's not just the 46 million people who don't have insurance. There's another 25 million people who are underinsured, as we keep hearing, that you can have insurance. You can have one serious illness and discover that you're going to still go bankrupt because the insurance won't cover most of your bills. So we keep talking about this, and every 15 years or so, we come back to it. And it's just hard to know, you know, when there's going to be a plan that's going to actually, you know, catch on and get enough, you know, bipartisan support to actually get through.
Gail Wilensky, let's say it's John McCain in the White House, and we imagine a Democratic Congress. What do you see the odds of a McCain plan actually flying?
What will have to happen is a president who can work with the Congress to craft a bipartisan solution that the Congress will support. One of the great strengths that John McCain brings to the table is his willingness and ability shown over the last several decades to reach out across the aisle to craft legislation with Republicans and Democrats and to build a compromise solution. That was what torpedoed the last attempt, an unwillingness, inability to bring together a coalition in the Congress. It was a my way or the highway strategy. I think John McCain has shown an ability to work with people both sides of the aisle, both chambers of the Congress. That's what it'll take, or we won't have any health care reform.
David Cutler, if Obama should win, can he get it done on health care? Can he muster the political support?
One of the things that the economic crisis is teaching us is that we need to focus on making the fundamentals of the economy sound again. And a very big part of that is what's going on with Wall Street. An equally big part of that is what's going on in healthcare. We are never going to have sustained economic growth that works for people unless we address the healthcare crisis. That's what Senator Obama is saying. That's why he's reached out to so many people. He's said he's open to all ideas, not just Democratic ideas, not just the ideas of people who agree with him, but he wants to get everyone together around a table, figure out how we're going to work it out. And that's what he keeps saying. And he thinks of healthcare as absolutely fundamental to what's going on now.
Voters, there's the broad stroke. In a month and change, you can decide. Gail Wilensky, David Cutler, Julie Robner, thanks to each of you for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.